this episode, recorded at the multi-stakeholder meeting titled Building a Coordinated Position for Caribbean Negotiations on Beijing Plus 25, Dr. Rosina Wilshire shares insight on how to engage effectively in regional and global processes in pursuit of gender equality. She draws on her vast experience negotiating in these spaces, including for the 4th World Conference on Women held in 1995 in Beijing, China. Dr. Wilshire stresses the importance of developing personal leadership capacities, such as through emotional intelligence, as well as working as a CARICOM bloc to advance common regional priorities.
Good morning, distinguished participants all. I'm not going to give you a lecture on negotiation. I want this to be a conversation. I'm going to speak for about 15, maximum 20 minutes, and within an hour, it's just to get a conversation going on what is required for effective negotiation. Successful negotiation requires as a foundation, the beginning, a clarity on the goals. What are we negotiating for? Why are we doing this? It's a transformational agenda. Human rights, equality, justice, peace, and care of the environment have been the guiding goals of the movement from its inception. A lot of negotiation takes place with people who have been at war, and at the foundation, it's about equality, justice, and a search for peace. The women's movement recognized that the care of the environment was a critical dimension of the transformational agenda and a key gender imperative. We call it Mother Earth for a reason. The second, from the clarity of goals, is understanding the context and building on lessons learned. The Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women in 1979, the Beijing Platform for Action, to which all governments signed on, embody the core goals. The human rights agenda, which was signed on immediately after the World War, developed with the CSW insisting on all human beings, and that the word man did not embody all human beings and could not represent it. Those are core framework documents on which we base our negotiation. This is not a UN agenda. Often we hear, oh, these things are about the UN agenda. Successful negotiation means that you have to own the agenda. It is about us. It is about us transforming our lives, our communities, our societies, and the world. This is not an outside agenda. The third core necessity is that we build bridges and effective partnerships, locally, regionally, globally, so that we work with our communities, we work government, civil society, we work with people who we don't necessarily like, with whom we don't necessarily identify, but who share the common goals to take forward the agenda, standing in one another's shoes. The fourth, putting the vision, national interests and commitments first, and being clear that it is not about you and your beliefs. Your beliefs are important, but if your beliefs are at variance with the government commitments, the national commitments, then you need to stand back. Understanding where compromise is possible and what is non-negotiable, and recognizing opportunities and challenges. So these are some of the cores, as I said, clarity of goals, understanding the context and processes, building bridges on effective partnerships, putting the vision, national interests, and commitments first, understanding where compromise is possible and what is non-negotiable, and recognizing opportunities and challenges. Caribbean leaders and negotiators have been traditionally outstanding in their vision and global leadership in this arena. Dame Nita Barrow and Lucille Mayer were outstanding in their strategic partnership building, with their recognition as global leaders in spite of the small size of this region. That was also true of our diplomats in New York, male and female. I cannot say the same thing presently. But in the I want to go back to the negotiations for the Beijing Platform for Action. I led UNDP's substantive participation from New York, and there was enormous pushback from the Vatican representative at the UN, who allied with some of the more conservative Muslim countries in opposing the language of gender. They claimed that gender was a code word for something else. Now, from New York, Angela King from Jamaica was head of DOR. She was also a key negotiator. We were part of the Secretary General's team and supporting the development of the document. So it was clear that we could not lose, we could not give way on the language of gender. It was core. So we made alliances. We contacted people in the Vatican who actually supported the agenda. We worked with nuns who supported the agenda. Globally, we mobilized women. I am an Anglican. The Anglican Communion at the UN asked me if I would come and speak to them and a group of other faith-based organizations who were accredited to the UN so they could understand what this gender agenda was about. And I willingly accepted. I spoke to them and they said, okay, now we know that we can support the language of gender. The bottom line is there will always be pushback coming from strong forces. But if you are clear about what you are, your goals, if you are clear about your commitment, and if you are prepared to build bridges wherever you find them, including in the Vatican, you build those bridges to take forward that agenda. In the negotiations and monitoring of the Beijing platform, now I would also say that the Caribbean, from the New York, we supported globally the national preparation for Beijing. And I was proud of the Caribbean. I mean, all the nations really mobilized. Women on the ground, men who shared the commitment. But the Caribbean was outstanding in terms of the women's movement, the willingness of the governments to collaborate with the NGOs, CARICOM as a coordinating force, bringing together and unifying the regional position. And we were powerful in Beijing, NGO and official meetings. And we have remained powerful for a long time. Recently, I have been in negotiations in New York and really wondered what has happened to that power, because we have been in disarray. Diplomats in headquarters seem to feel that they trump. Diplomats in New York seem to think that they have precedence over their headquarters representatives. And I have seen CARICOM, well, some diplomats telling their ministers from headquarters that they need to sit back. I have seen our government, some of our government negotiators tell the CSOs that they should not be in the room rather than seeing them as allies. I have seen CARICOM being asked to leave the room from the negotiation. It is what, and I've seen some of our diplomats take instructions from global NGOs. So it's we have to reevaluate who we are as a people, what the goals are, and understand what is our power and how we use that power effectively to make a difference to our countries and the people of our countries, women and men and children. Contextually as well, the Caribbean is losing ground in many critical areas. In the economic sphere, with macroeconomic policy producing increasing inequality and concentration of wealth in fewer hands. So the goal of poverty eradication, women's empowerment, is being undermined. Violence is increasing generally in our societies, beginning in the home, with policy responses not making the connections between domestic violence and societal violence. The connection and the link between strengthening gender equality, building emotional intelligence among boys and girls, has to be made if we are to make a difference. So, Madam, I'm not sure, I am all for building bridges and holding our men at our sides, working with them. But we cannot do that on the basis of a reinforced masculinity that is toxic and tells them that being masculine means being aggressive. And as CARICOM gender advocate, I led a study across 13 Caribbean countries on masculinity and violence. And our boys tell us that they need help because they are teased when they are not prepared to be buff, when they're not sportsmanlike, when they want to walk away from a conflict, that because they are told that they are not masculine enough, that is being sissy. So let's be clear about the transformational agenda. It is about every human being balanced with IQ, EQ, emotional intelligence in place, and the emotional dimension of the human fully engaged, the heart and the head acting in unison. While we have made progress with numbers of girls in school and their academic performance generally, we do not recognize that this is an elite group. The focus is on IQ and EQ skills with kindness, self-respect, mutual respect, self-discipline largely ignored. With our focus on IQ, 75% of girls and boys, mainly from the lower economic strata, are lost to the system. And we are surprised why violence is increasing in the schools and in the societies. They are discarded and we do not even know that they are there. Many of them have left after 5 years not being able to read and write. Technologically, there is enormous progress globally. Technology has enormous potential for growth and making a positive difference to humanity and our lives. However, technology is further isolating and dehumanizing us. Years ago, I saw a study of psychologists in England who raised an alarm that children were being exposed to the technology so early that they were seeing whole sections of the brain being underdeveloped. And those sections were the sections that enabled social development and emotional intelligence. Children can sit in a room today next to one another without ever communicating with one another, face to face. empathy and communication skills were being undermined. And we heard yesterday about children, about girls being so bright and so adept at technology and being lost as they go forward. And while I agree, and the data have shown that gender bias is a factor, while in charge of gender at the International Development Research Center in Canada, we did a study precisely to see why girls were being lost to technology as the years went by. And we were surprised at the number of girls who said they were not interested because it did not have a human face. It was too detached from humanity. So they were choosing, in order to protect their humanity, not to pursue the technological route and career. Environmental degradation and the impact of climate change are further challenging the sustainability of our countries. Food security is challenged, and we heard yesterday from one of our participants that violence is impacting women's role in agriculture. We need to connect the dots. I am heartened that youth like Greta Thunberg and youth around the world are coming together to reclaim the earth and our future. We need to see more Caribbean schools, more Caribbean children engaged. So EQ, IQ, the earth is important. How do we reinforce the vision with the broad holistic agenda which the Beijing platform embodied for equality, justice, and peace, and a sustainable world for all? Because all our negotiation towards these documents is going to have no impact if our societies continue to implode, if the pieces of the puzzle are not put back together so that our negotiation is holistic and coherent, domestically, internationally. How do we strengthen a domestic and international policy agenda which promotes, within a holistic framework, gender equality, empowerment of women, sustainable development, and peace, understanding that our survival is at stake? This is not just about documents and the Beijing platform. This is about our survival. How do we build more effective bridges between divergent CSO groups, government, and civil society in service of the transformational agenda? Only then can we reclaim Caribbean leadership in negotiating, both in national and international spaces, for equality, justice, peace, and a sustainable world for all. Thank you.